All right, so if you're downloading and listening to this episode of the podcast and wondering why the fuck we are talking about the series finale of Star Trek Voyager...
It's because we broke the temporal prime directive and have gone to the future.
That's right. I am now Admiral Eric. This is Admiral Richard, and we are here to fix the timeline. No, so we posted something a couple weeks ago... the same day that we released our last regular episode on Drive and Imperfection, saying that we were ending a Trek About for the foreseeable future. I don't remember exactly what the verbiage of the post is. You can go to trekaboutshow.com to find this out. I don't know if this will come as a huge surprise to anyone that has been paying attention to the show for a long time. You know, we moved to from a weekly to a biweekly schedule. And I think part of what this conversation will be about, I'm anticipating, is kind of why we're stopping Trek About in terms of Star Trek Voyager, because I don't know about Richard, and certainly there were some, you know, personal things going on that we're not going to get into that, you know, impacted this decision. But I think that if we had had those issues and were doing a better show, I think we would have powered through it.
Yeah, no, we talked about, do we want to finish a Voyager? And there were just the last few episodes have just been a slog. And that was not how I was feeling at DS9. It wasn't even how I was feeling at Next Generation. Part of it is the show. Part of it is it's years later. Part of it is, you know, our life circumstances are a lot busier and things like that. But I just, we're scraping the bottom for most of these episodes, it feels like. I saw a guide of season seven, like a watch it, skip it kind of guide, and most of season seven is in the skip it range, and I don't know. I kind of can get that. That's how most of the season has felt, and it's just been the Voyager staff is tired. We're tired. Everybody is tired.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think most of the series has been like that, frankly. And you know, Richard had asked me, like, are there episodes that I should watch that will provide context? And I think I gave you three episodes.
You gave me three. You gave me, and I have to say, so I watched Prophecy, was it called? The one with the Klingons and B'Elanna's baby.
Yes.
And it had been, due to recording schedule-wise, it had been a couple weeks since I'd seen a Voyager. And I watched that one, and I was curious. Am I going to be excited to see the old gang? And the answer was actually that I kind of wasn't. And which is weird because, you know, Deanna Troi has a guest spot in an episode, and I've perked up. In 2 weeks, we are going to be doing Star Trek Nemesis, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Picard and the gang again. Okay, it's the Voyager crew, and then I honestly did skip. I read summaries of the other two episodes, which was the Neelix goes off to the colony one and one other that I don't remember. And then
I don't even remember what the hell it was either, which probably says everything you need to know.
I mean, the basic things that I think I was to gather from that was Tom and B'Elanna have a baby, Neelix goes off, and Seven of Nine and Chakotay become a thing, which is probably the one that I have the most questions about because the others make sense.
Yeah, so that is you got the reason why, and I knew you would. I mean, there really isn't any sort of like thematic resonance to this. It's just like, yeah, B'Elanna's pregnant and they're gonna have a baby and Neelix goes away. And that's basically it. And I didn't want you having these sort of like lingering questions surrounding that. Now, that said, let's deal with the Chakotay and Seven of Nine plot first, because I think that A, it's about straight people, and of course, we are totally not interested in that, so it'll be easy enough to get rid of it quickly. But I also think that it's both indicative and not indicative of the problems with Star Trek Voyager, because of course, you know, this is the first time that they explicitly were in a relationship. This basically happened out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Is that a problem? Sure. But I will say that TNG did the same thing and all good things with Deanna Troi and Worf.
Yeah,
so I want to make sure that we're being careful in our attacks on Star Trek Voyager, because, you know, I had a problem with that relationship in TNG too. It seemed kind of like, why are they doing this now? This doesn't really make any sense. It's the last episode of the series. Like, why, you know, what is the point of this? And the answer is, well, there really isn't one.
Yeah, and in particular, DS9 and Worf and Dax really makes the Worf and Troy thing like irrelevant. Worf and Dax is so much of a more, frankly, organic and interesting and explored relationship that actually has that kind of chemistry to it that it works. And again, pairing Worf and Troy off is kind of silly in retrospect. But
I will say that I think that it is silly, but they also had a little bit of a point there, because of course Deanna Troi had this this sort of, like, you know, longstanding relationship or some sort of relationship with Worf and his son. And so, you know, all right, I can see that two people that are getting a little bit older, they're kind of like, well, all right, let's give this a shot and see how it goes. Whereas Chakotay and Seven of Nine.
No, they have.
They
both have something on their left eye, so it makes perfect sense that they would match it together.
Well, right, exactly. It's like, it seems arbitrary, like they were throwing darts at a board. And, you know, I get it, right? Like, this really smacks of Robert Beltran, I've said this before, was increasingly critical of the writing of Star Trek Voyager. And he would give interviews where he basically called the writers idiots and that every material that he was given was terrible and that all the episodes they were making were terrible. And that basically everyone involved in the production side of the show should be ashamed of themselves. And, you know, Robert Beltran was unhappy. He was working on this job for probably 60 hours a week. It's demanding work. You don't get much sleep. You know, I get it, right? And so if you're making a subpar product, you're going to have an emotional reaction to it. I don't necessarily think that, but whatever. I'm saying what Robert Beltran said.
Yeah, but we've all had bad times at work where we've blamed literally everybody we work with. You know, the thing is, we just didn't do that very publicly. So, you know, I think everybody, especially by this point, was just frustrated as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. And what it comes down to for me, though, is that the Chakotay stuff is galling, because aside from that part of the episode, he doesn't have anything else to do. And I think that highlights the problem with this as an episode. I think this highlights the problem with this as a series finale. And I think it highlights the problem of Star Trek Voyager as a television series, which is that I don't know what any of these people want, and I don't know who any of these people are. And there's a lot of commentary, right, about, like, why didn't we see them going home?
Yeah,
it's been 7 years, and I don't have a good sense of what it would mean to see Tom Paris go home. I don't have a good sense of what it would mean to see B'Elanna go home.
But
I don't have a good sense of what it would mean to have anybody go home. And what do they want to get home for? And they never satisfactorily answered that question.
I
think
know.
At the heart of Star Trek Voyager, it's a tautology. They want to get home because it's home.
Yeah. I want to see Tom Paris and his father. Like, I want to see Tom very stiff and then his father just burst into tears and embrace him and just finally have. Like, I want that moment, and they don't give it to us. I want to see Harry, Kim, and Libby. And then we fucking forgot about Libby. I want to see Janeway seeing Mark again. I mean, all of these people, even though they may have moved on in their lives, still want to see the, you know, are still going to have reunions with these people. And frankly, in a lot of ways, this episode works intellectually, right? It's attempting to be a bookend to Caretaker. It's attempting to resolve all of these stories. It's attempting to show different possibilities and all of those things. But, and again, partially due to the fact that everybody's just tired, it's a really poorly executed episode. It covers a lot of the same grounds that All Good Things does. All Good Things does want to show what is it going to be like when these characters, it's 20 years later, and have they gone their separate ways? Do they still hang out? Do they still see each other? And because we have been so invested in the lives of Picard and everybody, finding out that they've all drifted apart and having that message at the end of, no, we're going to really do our best to keep the family together is a very emotionally resonant and satisfying moment. The part when they are in Endgame, when they are in the mess hall and they're, it wasn't the journey, it was the destination, and Voyager's a fan. The show never fucking earned that, and that moment feels so cheap.
Yeah, this is a character study episode that has no characters to study. And I mean, this is going to get into some sort of loosey-goosey critical territory because there's just an ineffable somethingness about a piece of art that makes it good or makes it emotional or makes you feel something. And I mean, I've watched this show. You've watched this show. I had absolutely no emotional connection to anything that was going on screen. I mean, it's the in the future scenes, right? Chakotay is dead. Janeway is at his graveside, spilling her guts, and then he pans down and you see Chakotay's name.
Okay, so I want to say, so they at that point they've implied that something's happened to Seven of Nine. Neelix is not there. I didn't know that he was on another colony at this point because I hadn't looked up the episode yet. And Janeway mentions at some point, like, oh, I haven't seen them since the funeral. And thinking, oh, is it the Seven of Nine's funeral? Seven of Nine died. Did something happen with, what's going on? When they panned down to Chakotay, I said, oh, right, him. He's in this show. Like, I didn't even think he was a possibility for the guy who died because I fucking forgot about him.
Yeah. And isn't that a shame? And yeah. Again, I am not – at least I'm not criticizing Robert Beltran. Like,
no.
I feel his pain. Like, I do think Chakotay got short shrift. And fundamentally, that is a problem of execution. And, I haven't watched – most of the seventh season before recording this. I've seen it before, but I'm working off of memories of it that are a couple years old at this point. I Star Trek Voyager, I don't have the sort of like encyclopedic recall of Star Trek Voyager that I have of TNG or DS9 for probably what would be obvious reasons. But it just comes down to the fact that on all levels, this episode feels calculated to be a series finale and to hit these points, and it just feels very sketched out and artificial in a way that is unsatisfying, That's how you write television. At least that's how American television is written. They break stories and they figure out where they're going, and then someone goes off and writes it. But the best television is able to avoid feeling like that. And
that's how all
doesn't.
That's the circumstances under which All Good Things was written. And I cry at that episode every time I've seen it. I mean, it's
right.
DS9 has different circumstances around its finale, sure, but that's also, again, it earns its emotional things. And this doesn't. I mean, I think Janeway's plan is stupid and it doesn't really, I don't know. This episode isn't as resonant as it could be, and it should be, because on paper it has all of the elements that the Voyager finale intellectually should. I feel like the episode just half-asses itself very much. They're sort of leading to a moral decision that is the inverse of what the very first episode was, right? Like, Janeway makes a decision in the first episode that strands him in the Alpha in the Delta Quadrant for the greater good. Here she has an opportunity to make a decision that will sacrifice them getting home for the greater good, for destroying the Borg. And I feel like the ending would have been stronger if they weren't able to have their cake and eat it too, as they say. In other words, I think it's a lot stronger if Janeway at the end decides, something, I would do this all over again. I have second-guessed my decision in the episode Caretaker from time to time, but when push comes to shove, I need to do the right thing over getting home. And so what if it takes an extra 10, 13 years and we lose people on the way? It's not right to do this. This is what we need to do.
Right, because let's be clear, we're talking about Star Trek here.
Yeah.
I
feel like the episode itself could have had its cake and eaten it too by You know when they're saying, oh, we are going to go right back. The next exit is in the Delta Quadrant. And I figured, okay, that's what they're going to do. They're going to be right back in the Delta Quadrant. But somehow they end up in the Alpha Quadrant, and I didn't know how that happened. I missed that technobabble. And the episode then very could have easily ended with a 10 years later, and they finally make it to Earth. And then Janeway needs to give the big speech in front of everybody about how it wasn't always easy, and we made so many sacrifices along the way, but at the end of the day, we helped a lot of people, we dealt a devastating blow to the Borg, and finally, we all got home anyway. Like...
Yeah, yeah. Because, well, I mean, and that's... that. I'm having difficulty articulating exactly where I want to go with this, but I think that what it comes down to for me is that there are a lot of different ways that you could have approached this episode as the series finale of Star Trek Voyager. And, you know, you can't ignore the previous 7 years of garbage. Yeah. And bad choices and just all kinds of things piling on top of each other. And, you know, there was a lot of talk early on in the show when the show was slipping in the ratings of just bringing them home and just having them fly around the Alpha yeah. Quadrant. And then the idea was always like, well, what makes this show different? And the answer is nothing. It's basically TNG. But they basically just made TNG only in the Delta Quadrant. It's essentially ignored the premise of their own television series, except for an episode or two here and there in each season. And I don't really understand why they hit upon this particular story. And what I mean by that is it seems like they wanted to have the Borg in here.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't think it's necessary to have the Borg in this episode, but they really felt strongly that the Borg should be in this episode. So, hey, whatever. Sure. But there's a way to do that without also recalling like one of the finest episodes of television ever made, All Good Things. Because the beginning of this episode is very, very reminiscent of All Good Things. And then you get this like bizarre, I don't even want to call it character assassination of Janeway, because I think we're beyond that. But we are supposed to believe, because kind of like piggybacking on your comments about a caretaker, right? That Janeway is a captain. She made the Star Trek / Starfleet choice to sacrifice her crew for the greater good. You know, we have, I mean, fucking Tuvok quoting Spock in this episode, which is just like so on the nose. I can't believe they did it. And I mean, the only thing that they could have done would have been to have like, I don't know, like a bearded Spock and Captain Pike walk. Oh, wait a second.
No, I know. I mean, again, coming from Next Generation trying to go out of its way to make too many references to the original series because it did to Voyager, which is trying, which doesn't have enough emotional weight of its own. So it tries to crib from Spock's death. Like, right. Like that's fuck. It's tasteless almost.
And how is that even like an actual like saying that Tuvok would know? I mean, did Spock like write a book of 50 quotes for the bathroom? I'm very unclear about this, but
I know when Spock says it, I always thought of it as a like, you know, an old Vulcan saying he keeps quoting, like the Vulcan Aesop wrote that saying. But
yeah, now we're supposed to think it's Spock. Okay, yeah. So whatever, Star Trek Voyager. But I think that, like, you know, okay, so we're going back to Caretaker, right? And we're saying, all right, here's Janeway, and she's making this decision for the greater good. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, et cetera, et cetera. She is protecting the Ocampa from whatever, and she's going to destroy this thing, and then they're going to be stranded in the Delta Quadrant, and this is the decision that she has made because this is who Starfleet is.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds like a good setup for a TV show. Good job, guys. And now, 7 years later, we have grizzled Admiral Janeway.
Yeah.
Who has apparently decided that, I mean,
what makes
the key moment for me, we have Admiral Janeway beaming over to see the Borg Queen and making this just, you know, devil's trade of, if you let my crew go home, if you let these 130 people go home, I will give you all of the anti-Borg technology that the Federation has developed in the subsequent 23 years, meaning that she is possibly damning the entire Federation to being overridden by the Borg. Like, I find myself having a lot of problems with this.
Well, I guess that point, I think, is when she's still trying to – when she's bluffing, though. I think that's kind of her playing on the Borg, thinking of the Federation as naive. Now, granted, I don't think she sells well enough that she's that evil, which I want to get into in a second. But I that is right before – they try to assimilate, you know, they assimilate her and then she turns out to have the virus. Like, Janeway knows that the second she gets assimilated, she's banking on the Borg Queen saying, oh yeah, I'll take your deal, I'll let them go, and then reneging on it and assimilating her immediately, which is going to cripple the Borg. I don't know. I think she's just making an offer that's so tempting that she thinks the Borg Queen's greed for it is going to blind her to realizing that she's being played.
I can buy that, but I think that my problem with this, and I'm just being very blunt, episode where we're going to talk about Star Trek Voyager about, and my, like, the scales have fallen from my eyes, and I don't need to pretend to like this show, is that Star Trek Voyager is not a show that does subtlety. Star Trek is not a show that does subtext very well. Star Trek is a tell-not-show television series. And to me, I mean, I'm with you. Like, sure, you've convinced me. It's all subterfuge. But that's not what this show is. And I think that
argue that it is, because we've seen a lot of times, again, it's a good idea that's executed poorly in this case, but we've seen a lot of times where Janeway has gone along and pretended to have been, the one where it was, they're hiding was it telepaths or the psychic people or something? And there is the fellow who's defecting that she kind of has the romance with, and he's playing all the music.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know. I'm having trouble articulating exactly what my problem with it is. I think it's just executed so clumsily.
Yeah.
And that most times I don't expect or respect this show enough to think it's going to do something like that. And so, and this especially comes at the almost very end of a nearly 1.5 hour long episode of television. And it comes out of nowhere. No one has ever said anything about it before. And I think also, to my point, what may be actually worse is that whether or not this is true, and I think your interpretation is probably correct, I could believe that Admiral Janeway would do this. And isn't that a problem? Like, Janeway, we've always said, has been reckless. Janeway, we've said, has always had sort of a temper. She's never exactly been the most stable captain. And I kind of buy that she might do this.
Yeah,
isn't that a problem?
But here's the thing. You know, and I think they're trying to make it that Janeway's really good at the bluff, and now her partner in the bluff is literally herself, and so she's going to have a really fucking cool bluff. Like, I'm ready for that, and this is not a cool enough bluff, I think. This needs to be the big heist, you know, thing. We've seen heists on this show, and this isn't it. Unimatrix Zero was a great heist, and this should be a great heist. I guess it's that we have seen the show attempting to evolve Janeway over the course of time, particularly due to the influence of Chakotay, who has been the one who has questioned her all of the time, who has, you know, kept the restraints on her, and who finally, after 6 years, she finally learned to start listening to. Am I to believe that the Janeway that has been on the ship for six, seven years and knows that she has another 13, knows that she's going to be a total of 20 years on the ship, if that Janeway can make a decision and stick to her guns, I don't believe that the Janeway that is living back at home on Earth as a decorated hero is going to have life be so harsh that she abandons all of her moral principles. If the show knew what it was doing, it would go along the – it would have a moment where Janeway says to Chakotay to the effect of, gee, you know, you are my moral compass, and without you, I am lost. I do need you to reaffirming that relationship and showing that, yes, Chakotay is the moral compass to the degree that when he dies, Janeway goes off the deep end. But the show doesn't know that well enough.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really, really good point. And I think you're right. And I think that's exactly what they should have done. And they don't do that.
See, you know what? Well, the thing is, you know what episode this episode is kind of a loose remake of? Women's Hysteria starring Kes. Remember the one where she suddenly comes back and is evil?
Oh, yes. Fury. Yep.
And so they have a past version of Kes who is not jaded and painful, convincing her future version that, no, you need to do the right thing. Let's get you home. Let's get you happy. I mean, that's thematically, that's what's going on here. And they botched the execution as well. I think we said the biggest problem with Fury is that it doesn't even remotely attempt to explain how Kes went from this to this. She was fine when we last saw her. Now she's a murderess. How is Janeway going to go to the point of reversing the past 10 to 23 years of existence just because of the deaths of a few people?
Right. Well, I think on the other hand, though, and to play devil's advocate, if time travel were possible, wouldn't it be very tempting to go back in time to your younger self and basically, you fucking idiot, what the fuck are you doing? Don't do that.
Yes and no, because I do look at I look at certain past mistakes or parts in my life that have been bad, and now I'm at the age where I'm seeing the dividends as learning experiences, you know? And
yes,
maybe I should have made a couple of decisions slightly differently, but ultimately, I guess this is where the difference is. Ultimately, I'm becoming to be happy with the course that my life has taken, and I wouldn't alter that. Admiral Janeway is obviously not at that point. She's looking at the direction her life has taken, and it is a great temptation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see that. I think that it's very difficult to – I'm not saying anything new here, but it's very difficult to tell a young person what to do or to give them advice. They don't want to listen. They just have to learn the lesson on their own. And
yeah.
I think that that's kind of what's going on here, but what is frustrating about it to me is that – like, I don't have a good sense of who Admiral Janeway is as a character. Yeah. I don't think the episode gives enough weight to the fact that it seems so like it's just the pile of more shit approach to storytelling, which is like, well, this she needs to go back and do this to make this plot happen because Chakotay died and Seven of Nine died and Tuvok has incurable dementia and what else? Like, I get it. Like, that's bad. And those things are not good. And I would prefer them not to have happened. But other people have died. And I don't really get the sense that any of this, like, we don't know what happened to Seven of Nine, right? Like, we need to know that. We need to know how Chakotay died. Like, because if it was some kind of like terrible, horrible thing that affected Janeway for years, it was her fault that they died, like unequivocally her fault. And if she had been in the Alpha Quadrant, she would have like been court-martialed. You know, like what happened?
What I thought was going with where I thought the Seven of Nine thing was going once the Borg Queen was in is that the Borg, they got home because the Borg Queen made one final push for Seven of Nine, and Seven of Nine decided, you know, no, I've been called to make the sacrifice so many times, it's now, it's happening, go home, and kind of, went off half-cocked in a Janeway way and rejoined the Borg, and the Borg let Voyager go home. Like, I thought that was where that was going, and Janeway was trying to undo that decision. And maybe offer herself as the thing to be in Seven of Nine's place. Because as much as the Borg Queen wants Seven of Nine home, the Borg Queen wants Janeway. Like, I thought that's where that was going. That it was Janeway regretting that somebody else made a sacrifice that by right she should have done.
Yeah, I actually think that's a really good point. And I would have liked to have seen that or at least had an element of that. And I think that's every instinct of this episode is almost entirely wrong, which I think is what the problem with it is, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, like a very small example to this, right, is we have always been made. I mean, Harry Kim is the butt of every single joke we've ever made on this show. And What is his character in this episode? Now he's a captain. Like that is all that he did in his life, and we don't have a sense that he had kids. We don't have a sense that he was married. We don't get a sense like his parents are alive or dead. We don't know what the fuck is going on with this guy. And it's like, all right, sure, but.
And he's not exactly getting plum assignments either. I mean, he's coming back from a 4-year deep space surveying mission. And I mean, he makes the joke that, yeah, you know, after Voyager, that's like a weekend trip. But, you know, because of his unique circumstances, he's willing to do the crap jobs. And that's the best hope he has. Because let's face it, everybody immediately got a promotion upon getting back to Earth. And Harry Kim's not getting the great assignments because he's still Harry Kim. I mean, the show... This episode almost characterizes Harry Kim when he makes his toast, right? Like he says, oh, everybody's been wanting to get home and nobody's been wanting to get home as badly as I have. Oh my God, that's a characterization for Harry Kim that could have been happening this whole time. The entire time of the show, anytime anything happened, he could have been, you know, on Earth the food's a lot better. Oh, on Earth we have this. Oh, if I was back on Earth, I'd be doing this right now. And... have him be the homesick kid who finally, in the last episode, realizes, you know, I am getting back to Earth and I'm excited about this, but I never would have had all of these experiences. And that would have actually fucking meant something, but because nobody ever knew what to do with Harry Kim, he's just, all right, well, let's give the guy to the toast to the most blank person here.
Yeah, because I think that you know, I think it's time for us to kind of like drill down into exactly what is wrong with the characters of Star Trek Voyager, because, you know, I like some of them, right? I like Seven of Nine a lot. I like the Doctor. I like Neelix. But some of them, frankly, just don't exist. And I have a theory that I want to float to you that I just thought of. So it's very unformed, but hey, let's do it.
Yep.
People have said, oh, the characters on TNG were this underdeveloped. And to some degree, I would agree with them, right? Like, Geordi at the beginning of the series and Geordi at the end of the series, like he grew a little bit, he changed a little bit. Obviously, he went from being the helm officer to being the chief engineer, you know, things like that, right? Like, I don't think a lot of these characters were like the most dynamically well drawn out. They didn't have these like insane, you know, plot, these insane character developments over the 7 years. But why the characters on TNG worked is because a lot of them, maybe all of them to some degree, were drawn as archetypes first. And then the sort of like shadows were shaded in a little bit. And so, you know, Geordi is the nerd and they shade that in with his relationship with Data a little bit, right? Or Riker is the really, you know, sexist, you know, roguish guy that sleeps around a lot. He's in the Kirk vein, but they shade the edges of him a little bit and you get a sense of who he is as a person. He plays the trumpet and all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, DS9 characters or DS9's characters. I don't think we need to say anything more than that.
Yeah.
If you want to hear us talk at length about DS9, go back to our podcast about it. They were just fantastically well-drawn characters. And I think the issue with Voyager is that they are not fantastically well-drawn characters in the vein of DS9, but they're also not archetypal in the vein of TNG. And so you can get away with not doing a ton of character development with archetypal characters because they're archetypal, right? We all kind of have a sense of who these people are and what they're going to do because that is the point of an archetype. But if you don't have them as archetypes and you don't develop their character enough, it's unsatisfying.
Yeah, I mean, the I think a corollary to that is that even though the TNG characters might have been a little more one note at first, especially, the notes were all very different and they were able to play around with the differences there. I mean, Geordi's relationship with women, for example. They do a lot with contrasting him to Riker, who is very easy at picking up chicks. And then later on, they're able to contrast Geordi to Barclay, who is even worse with women and even more awkward. And it gives – and that's a very easy way of showing Geordi's development because suddenly he finds himself in the mentor role to somebody. And those are all very different notes and just on one aspect of their characters. And none of them are like Worf, who is serious and a warrior and very uptight and – you know, funny in that way, and who is also very different from Data, who is just more methodical and naive in certain ways and all of that. What are the big differences between Harry Kim and Tom Paris? I mean, Tom talks a good game, but is he really that great with women? And is he really that charismatic enough. It's just usually, Tom and Harry.
Right.
And Chakotay, again, being Native American is not enough to be a characterization, especially not in the way that they did it. And he doesn't really stand out in any way.
No, I mean, he doesn't. I would be very surprised if Chakotay is in the pantheon of great Star Trek characters. And, you know, again, this is not a criticism of any of the actors on the show. I think they all do a fine job with the material that they're given. But it is a shame that the show... And this is why Endgame fails, right? That we don't have these emotional... We don't have these emotional reactions or these emotional relationships with these characters. And so... In an episode, especially in the first half of this episode, which is very dependent on fond memories and sort of like warm feelings towards these characters, I don't have it. You know, I think the one scene that really works for me in this episode, oddly enough, is the scene of Seven of Nine and Neelix playing.
Yeah. I didn't realize that the two of them were that close in that way, although I assume that's probably developed because they're both looking after the children in kind of that way, and so they do end up hanging out. But yeah, like, and frankly, the two actors weren't even in the same room.
And I guess that's what it really comes down to for me is that, you know, we've been talking about this episode for about 40 minutes. I honestly don't know what else we can say. I'm sure we'll talk for a few minutes more, but we talked about the DS9 finale for an hour and 40 minutes. We talked about the TNG finale for like an hour and change. This is just not a very good show. Like, and I don't even think it's not a very good show. I just think it's not, there's not enough meat here to really critically examine.
Yeah.
And it's a show that you watch and you turn off your brain and you enjoy it or you don't, but there's nothing really here. And I mean, if I want to watch television like that, I'll watch The Great British Bake Off. I'll watch Drag Race. Like, I'll watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, you know, there's a lot of television shows that I can watch that I don't need to have this sort of, like, weight to them. But we're talking about a Star Trek show. And it's just, there's so much wrong here that I don't think we can adequately categorize every single thing or exhaustively categorize every single thing that's wrong with this series. Am I making sense?
No, it's a case of...
I'm not making sense? Okay.
No. it's not exactly that we divide television into the snack and the vegetables buckets, you know, but at the same time, there are certain shows that I watch when I want to be a bit – when I want to think a bit more thoughtfully. And I'm not watching Mad Men and Bob's Burgers for the same reason. I'm, you know
– Sure.
And both are good. It's just that, you know, Bob's Burgers is very good at being a comedy show. Mad Men is being very good at a ensemble drama. Even though Bob's Burgers does a lot with recurring character work and Mad Men has a lot of funny and entertaining moments, which I think both of that spices up the main purpose of what the show does. Voyager, on the other hand, doesn't really – it's not adventuresome enough to be a fun character-based action-adventure romp, and it's not well-written enough to be a – character drama with some fun action bits. I mean, TNG is good, depending on the episode, of being a fun action adventure romp with good characters and a character drama with some adventure parts.
Yes, I agree, because I think that fundamentally is the problem with that, with Endgame and with Star Trek Voyager, is that this show never knew what it was. And
yeah,
I always compare this show to, for some bizarre reason, to Stargate SG-1. I'm a Stargate SG-1 fan. I like it. It is not a profound show. It is a dumb action-adventure romp. But it works because they know that, and it works because the main actors in the show all have very broad yet clearly defined characters. And it is also funny. And
I get the sense that Stargate SG-1 is not embarrassed to be that show. It's proud to be that show, actually.
Yeah, it revels in it. I mean, that's what it is. It is cheesy as fuck, and it likes being cheesy as fuck. And yeah, certainly it does some things that are more serious and et cetera, et cetera. But Star Trek Voyager just doesn't know what to do with itself,
yeah.
And it never knew what to do with itself. And, you know, I remember telling you way back when we did Caretaker that, you know, if you didn't like Star Trek Voyager, wait a couple years, it's going to become a different show. And I think to a large degree that is true.
But at the same time, none of those shows ever have the opportunity to find their voice. I think I've said a couple times, like, it feels like every season is season two.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. I mean, we did not see the bulk of the Kenneth Biller season, but frankly, it did not become like a wonderful show or anything.
I don't think that there's anything in the episodes I skipped that would change my opinion. There would certainly be a couple of good episodes, but, you know, it's going to be the same series.
It is what it is. You're going to get what you're going to get, for better or for worse. And I guess that's really what it comes down to, is like there was a consistency of quality here, and the consistency of quality was just not very high.
Yeah, this was the letdown. it's an anticlimax when I mean, I'll say Voyager got home, and it's just like, oh, and suddenly we're home, and then credits, and
there was nothing to it.
My overwhelming reaction was, wait, was that it?
Yeah, that is it. I mean, that's, you know, I think they were trying to provide a little bit of that with the future elements, the part of the episode that took place 33 years after the pilot episode. But
I think that's,
you know,
I thought that was actually part of the way that I thought this was a poorly told episode, because it frankly, I didn't really like. Once the Borg Queen came in, I liked it a little bit better because it actually had a little bit of a focus, but the bits when it's just Janeway bumming around the future were just kind of aimless, and I wasn't invested in any of these characters enough to see how they grew up. And I mean, I'm imagining a version of the episode that starts with season 7 Voyager, and oh, we've got this wormholes. Are we going to go? Oh, we're going to go past them, and then suddenly they see a ship that's hailing them, and it's Admiral Janeway. And so for the first part of the episode, there is also a little bit of a mystery. Well, who is this lady? Is this really Janeway traveling from the future? Gee, she's nothing philosophically like I am today, but at the same time, she knows a lot. She has the right DNA. She's saying the right things. Am I really going to turn into this person or not? We, the audience, know that this is all the case, and so all of that business is very tedious.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, like, like, why not? I mean, I will say, though, that I disagree with you a little bit, because I do think that the first 10, 15, 20 minutes of the episode, I'm not exactly sure how long the future scenes are before we see present, quote unquote, present day Voyager, do try to establish something, which is that they got home. They're still hanging out with each other. The doctor's named Joe now. He has a hot wife. Good for him.
Yeah.
I could have done without that, but whatever. And also that, Here are the consequences of the way that they got home. Here are the consequences of the Janeway way of getting home, right? Because that has always been something in the show, there's a Janeway way of getting home that is a Starfleet way of getting home, and that they are going to stick to the Starfleet way. They are going to stick to the rules. The Maquis are going to do the Starfleet thing. They're going to get into the uniforms, or they're going to be in some serious trouble. We are not going to take shortcuts. We are not going to do this. We are not going to have alignments with all these alien races. You know, all the things about Star Trek. You could go through the Federation Charter, and you could highlight everything and say, we are going to do exactly this and nothing more, nothing less. And this is what the consequences of that were, that it took them 23 years to get home, and that Chakotay died, that Seven of Nine died, that Tuvok has dementia, that a bunch of other people that are nameless and faceless died, and everyone's life was ruined, essentially, right?
Yeah,
and
but the problem is, how is everybody that bad in the future? I mean, yes, it's sad that people have died, but I mean, spoiler alert, you and I and everybody listening to this podcast and everybody involved in Star Trek Voyager and every single person on this earth is going to die at some point. Like, that's going to happen. And as Sartre
says. I don't think Trump thinks he's going to
I can't wait till he does. That's going to be so funny.
Every day look at the New York Times to see if he's died.
I'm being a little flippant. Yes, and yes, real talk. I don't want my loved ones to die. I don't know what I would do if I had the power to change the past. But at the same time, she's taking away Harry Kim's captaincy. She's taking away
the doctor's wife.
The doctor's wife. She's taken away Reg Barkley's confidence and lecturer position. I mean, she is the people.
She's taken away Maral Perez's entire life, essentially. Because, now, you know, I mean.
Yeah. It's one thing if you have a time travel episode that's traveling back to the events of the same episode. And so we've really only undone a day or two of things. But at the same time, but she's undoing 23 years. She's doing, again, not only Maral Perez's entire career, her entire life is undone by Janeway's actions. And this is a franchise that made the statement that as fucking amazing as Edith Keeler is, if the timeline says that she passed away, we can't change that. As much as it pains Kirk to let her die, he knows he has to because that's the right thing to do.
Go ahead.
I mean, this directly contradicts sitting on the edge of forever. Is this saying that Kirk should have saved her anyway?
Right. And I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, I think that I have a lot of problems with the way Star Trek Voyager interprets Star Trek. But, you know, I was going to say we can get to that in another episode, but we really can't. but, like, I think that I'm with you on that. But I also think that the other part of it that is so galling for me is that they decided to tell this story. Like, this is not something that they had to do. They did not have to make the decision that it took the Voyager crew 23 years to get home. You know, they could have made anything because, you know, spoiler alert. They're making all this up, right? Like, they could have done anything. And I get what they're trying to do here. We have said, you know, they're trying to, you know, bookend Caretaker. They're trying to, you know, ask hard questions about was Janeway right to do things the way she did them, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there would have been a better way to do this, and I just don't think the execution is very well done. And it's also just not very interesting to watch. I mean, the back half of this episode is frankly pretty tedious to watch.
Yeah, I honestly had if it had been up to me, I would have put the second caretaker in this episode, make it so that she's starting to kidnap people from the Alpha Quadrant. And, again, I think you need to have Janeway reaffirming that decision she made at the beginning of the series, that even though there has been all of this hardship, that was the right thing to do. Doing the right thing sometimes means doing the hard thing and making sacrifices. And at the end of the day, we are Starfleet and we make these sacrifices. And, you know, something, we'd make them again, even with the thought of hindsight, even knowing where the consequences of the actions go. It's not worth the moral compromise.
Yeah.
And this episode is not that deep.
No, well, no, it's not. I mean, the show itself is not that deep. But I think that you know, the thing that I always think about with Endgame is that, you know, this was Kenneth Biller's one and only season as showrunner.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you know you're going out, I mean, they went into this knowing it was going to be the end of the series.
Yeah.
The seventh season was going to be their last. Like, why not really swing for the fences? Like, you had the audience you were going to have. Maybe it would collapse. Maybe it wouldn't. But I doubt it. If you really want to ask hard questions about was Janeway's approach the right way, like, I don't know, have Janeway die and have Chakotay decide to, you know, use the Borg conduit to get home.
And then
the next season is like all about them getting back to being in the Alpha Quadrant. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a television writer, but I just feel like there could have been a lot of more interesting decisions to tell this. And it's the approach to storytelling that Star Trek Voyager has as this atomized thing, this standalone thing that, you know, Deep Space Nine had this like 10-part series finale essentially, and Voyager, the show that is built more than any other Star Trek series to demand serialization, even in the last season of the show, just couldn't do it.
No, I mean, I'm imagining a more narratively experimental version of the series that does have a serialized seventh season. What if the first episode of the seventh season is they arrive on Earth and then it's going between the 23 years later, Admiral Janeway doing her and intercutting into the events of what happened before. Let's see what, you know, let's take a few episodes. Let's have an episode with Seven of Nine's disastrous away mission. Let's see Tuvok beginning to degrade. And let's get the stakes. Let's see this happening and let's have this be hard to watch. So that way we understand why Admiral Janeway is going to make this decision. Because as I see it, you know, again, the tragedy at the heart of all good things is that all of these people who were once extraordinarily close, after this, after the mission was over, after they all left the Enterprise, they don't really talk to each other again. And the events of the plot makes them realize, no, we were stronger together. We should have, we made some mistakes, and now we have the opportunity to cement our bonds. Voyager is literally having a reunion every year after year. It's not like the survivors are all isolated. Again, this episode does not sell that things are that bad that Janeway needs to do this drastic of a thing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it doesn't. And frankly, the series itself doesn't really sell that. I mean, we've always had problems with the idea of the Voyager crew as a family, and this is another example of the show telling and not showing, but...
Let me ask you the other question. Why does Janeway travel back to this wormhole and not to, for example, a week before Caretaker and destroy the Caretaker herself so that way the real Voyager just catches the Maquis ship and brings it home and so they don't even go on this journey in the first place? Like, isn't that kind of an arbitrary point to pick it from? If you're going to undo 23 years, you're going to undo 23 years, you can undo 30 years.
True, but I think that I mean, you know, the obvious answer is that they didn't want to erase the television series, but like,
oh, I want them to.
Like, why? Yeah, like, why not? I don't think that Star Trek Voyager is anything great to keep around. I mean, you know, what is the point of the series? I don't know. And I think that there are so many. What it really comes down to for me is that this episode is the culmination of a series of increasingly poor creative decisions. And this is, for better or for worse, an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah. I can't pretend this was a good show. I can't pretend this was a great show, and I don't know if I can quite pretend that it was a good show. I think we have a good idea of what Voyager is as an object, right? And
yeah,
it's... I can't even say that, well, it had a lot of flaws all of there, but it had a lot of heart. And, like, I've enjoyed plenty of bad art because it had a lot of spirit to it, right? Because, you know, this show doesn't quite work. It's hokey, but everybody involved in it was having a hell of a time, and they did a lot of cool things, and they tried to... I can't say that about Voyager. At the end of the day, Star Trek The Original Series was Gene Roddenberry looking at the social change of the 1960s and extrapolating that, viewing that the changes that were happening were good things and that in an ideal future we would have continued that progress. And here is the paragon of that philosophy going on. Here's the coolest guy in the Federation and how he solves problems. And Next Generation is a very similar thing. It sees, all right, this is a new era. We need a new hero for these times. And that's Captain Picard. And he's a reflection of what the best of the world is at this point in 1989-ish. And DS9 looks at that and says, there are some limits to that philosophy, and there's some limits into saying this is a paragon of ideals because everybody has different ideals and philosophies. And how do you have a sense of what is good and right in a morally relativistic universe. And Voyager says, all right, we've got to make another Star Trek show.
Yep. Absolutely. And I don't know what this show... I mean,
it's
the way that I will... The way that I will put this is that, you know, I said to someone once that they were talking about possibly rebooting TNG in a similar fashion to how they rebooted the original series for the Abrams first movie.
Okay.
And I don't know that this was ever a real thing that was even on the, you know, the dimmest chances of actually happening. But I said that I thought that rebooting TNG was disrespectful because it's a damn good television series that can stack up with the best of the quote unquote golden age of television, but nobody gives it the respect that it deserves. And I think that Star Trek, The Next Generation deserves an extraordinarily deep amount of respect because the ways in which Star Trek, The Next Generation tells its story, its storytelling aims and its storytelling approach are so different from how people watch television now that I think it's very difficult for people without a critical eye to really understand how good this series is. And
I
don't
also
feel that way about Voyager. Like, if someone wanted to reboot Voyager, I'd be like, do it. Like, now's the right time to do it. Remake this show or like take the concept and do it in a different universe or something. Like,
there is there is that theme that's hidden under Voyager that it never quite does of, again, here we are far away from the Federation, far away from any laws that whatever we do will be okay. We can get home however we want and we'll figure it out. And I mean, there was the two-parter with the other crew that was eating the little mermaid aliens and stuff like that. Yeah. There are moments where it does that, but by and large, the show is not about that, and the show forgets about that a lot. And yes, I would be very interested in a show that actually is interested in that theme, for example.
Right. Like take the concept of Star Trek Voyager, take the setting of Star Trek Voyager and run with it and actually think about the ramifications of it. Like, how would these people actually act? How would these people actually inhabit this situation? And, you know, I mean, I will it ever happen? Probably not. But I just think that, you know, so many people have said, well, we hope that you are we hope that you're fair to Star Trek Voyager. And I think we have been, the seventh season notwithstanding, because we didn't watch most of it. But I just think that at the end of the day, like, if you have fond memories of this show because you watched it with your mother when you were growing up, then I'm not going to try and take that away from you. I honor that. And I respect that.
And there are a lot of episodes that are very good that we did enjoy.
Yes.
That we did like.
Yes. Yes. There are episodes of Star Trek Voyager that I like quite a bit and that I will go back and watch, you know, irrespective of anything else. But, you know, will I ever do another full rewatch of Star Trek Voyager? No, I don't think so.
No. And,
you know, one of the things that I always like to say is that I like television shows that are more than the sum of their parts. Well, we have seen almost all of Star Trek Voyager, and I think we can safely say that this is the first Star Trek series, maybe the animated series, but I'm not counting that. The live action Star Trek series. This is the first one that isn't more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
It is exactly what it is, and no more and no less.
Maybe even less, because I think by this point, it is a victim of its own expectations. It doesn't have, you know, we've had the original series, which I didn't quite love at the time, but but when I watch an episode that I pick out of the original series, I enjoy the hell out of it. I have watched a bunch of Next Gen. You know, Next Gen is my Star Trek series of, if you're having a bad day, watch Star Trek. If you're having a good day, watch Star Trek. That's Next Gen for me. And there are a lot of episodes that I would love to watch again. Yes, I may never watch De-Evolution again, but that's okay.
Nobody needs to watch Code of Honor again.
Yeah. DS9, I would love to do a full series watch of that, especially knowing where it came out. Voyager, I don't know if I'm ever going to watch an episode of Voyager again.
Yeah, yeah. And isn't that the worst thing you can say about it? I mean, it's just there. And now it's over.
You know, it's like one of those weird, I was at the store and they have these like potato chips that are made out of crickets. And it's something I would try once, but oh my God, it's never going to replace my junk food snacking.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Well, I think the last thing that we should talk about before I wrap this episode up is we haven't talked a lot about how we think Voyager fits in with Star Trek, like as a franchise. And I mean, maybe we have. I mean, maybe that's it, that it just doesn't really have much to offer. It didn't really make any lasting contributions to the franchise. And it's not really, like, I'm not going to say it's not worthy of the Star Trek name or anything like that, because I do think that, you know, absent everything else that we have said in this hour-long podcast, it is at least on the surface, it is a well-done television series. Like putting aside the writing and putting aside like that kind of thing. Like, I mean, the acting and the set design and the, you know, all that, all the production stuff, like, you know, post-production, like all that is done very, very well. It is a very competently executed television series. But, like, you know, I guess we'll have to see, right? Like, if the Picard series is all about his adventures in the Delta Quadrant, like trying to negotiate a peace treaty between the Kazon sects or something. Yeah. Oh my God. Now I hope it's really that, because that would be the ultimate troll to everybody. Anyway, but do you know what I mean? Like, I don't really get what this show contributes to Star Trek very much. And I think that in some respects, it actively harms it.
I think I would agree. Well, I mean, look, I don't know anything about Enterprise still. I don't know if I'll end up watching it or not. At least the premise of Enterprise is trying to ask a different question. And I mean, that, I think that was the era that everybody was starting to tell origin stories a lot in. And you know, that's the beginning of that trend we have now. So I feel they're very disappointed with Voyager. I was hoping, I guess, to have the same experience I did with TNG, which was of realizing that something that I thought was good was a lot better than I had expected it. Coming back from the fact that I never watched it as a whole when I was younger, and that I was coming off of original series, which I thought was all right at the time, I was so pleasantly surprised by TNG. And I don't think Voyager ever really surprised me much.
Yeah. And isn't that pretty much the worst thing you can say about anything?
I don't know. It depends. You know, some not all surprises are good surprises, but
yeah, that's true. I don't want to open my bag of Doritos and see a cricket in there. yeah.
They were ground up and made into chip shaped things. Like, it didn't look like cricket. It was just cricket flour.
Yes, I know. There's cricket flour. I've watched Shark Tank. I know these things.
Yeah, it was on. It was the thing on Shark Tank.
It was.
You know, Shark Tank is better at being a show than Voyager. No, that's really unfair to say. But
well, if we had continued doing the podcast, I would have, you know, said we would do a Patreon special on the ramifications of, you know, a capitalist propaganda with Shark Tank. But anyway, we don't yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, goodbye to Star Trek Voyager. I don't. Yeah, that's it. I mean, this seems, I just keep thinking in my head about, like, how our DS9 podcast went and how our TNG podcast went,
what?
Like the final episodes, and like this one just.
Well, what I have a question, and this may be very demoralizing because I feel like the answer involves novels, but. So what is the state of the Borg at the end of this episode? Like, one of their major they've been given a virus that's, quote, added just enough order into chaos, and they've also crippled one of their transit stations. Like, I really wish they had said, yeah, no, we gave a virus that gave everybody the Unimatrix Zero thing. You know, welcome. Now your rebellion is going to be – I don't know. Like,
well, look, if you want to go on a fun – adventure for yourself.
It's the books, isn't it?
I will say that the post Voyager, post Nemesis, post what the fuck is the DS9 series finale?
What You Leave Behind?
What You Leave Behind? Yes, I'm leaving that in. My brain is fried. It's Friday, and we've been talking for over an hour. That the post relaunch novels, some of them are better than others, of course, as that kind of thing is going to go. But I actually quite like them a lot. Mm. And specifically, I like what they did with the Borg, because they had I haven't made it through even the bulk of them. I still have a few lying around that I need to pick up and read, you know, continue my journey into these novels, because there's like a particular order you read them in. And there's like, there's like post Nemesis Riker novels where he's like captaining a ship with like Deanna Troi, and there's like the Voyager post relaunch novels where like some characters are on Earth and some characters have gone back to the Delta Quadrant, and like voluntarily, not like another accident. And there's like DS9 ones, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. But there are a series of post relaunch novels that do deal with the Borg and have built this like really, I think, actually well crafted story that essentially like is the final word on the Borg.
Okay. Well,
so I'm would recommend that.
I'm sure it's not as good as my DS9 sequel series, which I've got so many ideas for, but
I'm sure it's not. But it is good.
So Janeway's role in the plot, by the way, will be that because she's been away in the Delta Quadrant this entire time, she has missed every Dominion War related thing, and so is going to be kind of a little out of place. Because I mean, we still fucking talk about 9/11 all the time, and imagine you weren't anywhere when that happened. You have no frame of reference. Everybody tells their Dominion War stories, and she's like, well, I was in the Delta Quadrant. But by that matter, she has no baggage with the changelings, who, even though they're nice now, nobody quite trusts. So that's going to be a nice alliance between Janeway and the changelings, which is going to come into play when the Klingon Civil War threatens to break out and the changeling decide this is their moment to be integrated into society by preventing a next second devastating war with Janeway's help.
Well, Richard, I will make this offer to you. If you want the keys to the TrekAboutShow.com website, you can turn it into
my fan fiction site.
DS9 fanfic site. And I'm sure that the listeners would have no problem with that whatsoever.
I'll start sketching out some outlines.
Well, I think that'll do it for Star Trek Voyager. I think that will do it for Endgame. I think that that'll do it for that. Leave a comment if you want. I'm not going to go through the usual spiel, because we're not going to ask you for money. Patreon's done. It's kaput, because the podcast is done and kaput. But we'll probably be a little more maudlin next time we record, and you know, Star Trek and Nemesis and the end of TNG and the end of an era and all that crap. So
hey, maudlin is the worst way to get new listeners to listen to the show.